Hi, this is Susie Larson, and thank you so much for listening to Live the Promise today. Our website is filled with even more powerful and encouraging interviews. Learn more by logging on to myfaithradio.com. Welcome to Hour 2 of Live the Promise. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. Glad to have you along today for the ride. If you've just tuned in, you missed my first hour discussion with Matthew Barnett, and he's got a new book out titled Misfits Welcome. And I'm telling you, if you even have the slightest inkling that God wants to use you to change the world, which he does, I want you to go back and listen to that podcast. You will be so inspired, so challenged, so encouraged. Our website is myfaithradio.com. And also, the great giveaway started yesterday, and I just got to tell you a quick word about that before I bring on my good buddy, Dr. Greg Smalley. So what we do is we've got a month, right? I'm sending you on a mini mission trip, and I'm asking you, do the best thing you can with $15. And if you don't have $15, do the best you can with whatever's in your hand, all right? And on December 18th, which, Greg, by the way, is my birthday, mark that down, my birthday, we're going to dedicate the whole show where you call in. It's almost like I send you out to the mission field. You come back on that day. You call in with your stories of how God used you, what God did, and it's just this great time of inspiration. Everybody who gets on the air will get a book and a wonderful Christmas Ghirardelli candy bar. Two of the most inspiring stories will get great gift baskets of goodies. And so, but we're doing a little twist different here now. So if you get on our website, myfaithradio.com, go to the Live the Promise page, and you'll see a banner that says The Great Giveaway. If you click on that and just say, count me in, basically, you fill out that information, the first 300 of you to do that, and in 24 hours, we've got over 40 already signed up, but you'll get a wonderful Faith Radio mug for you, filled with hot cocoa and some fun stuff, but a beautiful Christmas card that will go with your gift. So if you're sending a gift to the other side of the world, if you're helping your local food shelf, helping a neighbor, this beautiful card will explain why you're doing this, that you're inspired to be a part of the great giveaway because God has been so good to you. So I'm so excited. 300 mugs out the door to the first 300 who sign up and just say, count me in, all right? You don't even have to know just yet what your great gift is. Go to our website. Just tell us, count me in. I'm going to be part of this. And you got to know, many people are mobilized to do these random acts of kindness, and it's amazing what God does. So I can't wait to have you be part of it. All right, today we're talking about strengthening our marriage. Last time Greg was on, we talked about cherishing our spouse, which Greg says is an attitude. Today we're going to talk about nourishing our spouse, which is an action, and Greg's going to unpack that for us. Even though he really needs no introduction, let me do that for him. Dr. Greg Smalley serves as Executive Director of Marriage and Family Formation at Focus on the Family. He's the author of 11 books, including the DNA of Relationships, the DNA of Parent and Teen Relationships, Wholehearted Marriage, one of my favorites, and Fight Your Way to a Better Marriage. He and Erin live in Colorado with their three daughters, Taylor, Murphy, and Annie, and their son, Garrison. And you can find his influencer page at our website at myfaithradio.com. And Greggy is not feeling so hot today, so bear with him if he sniffles. Hi, Greg.
Hi. Yeah, so if I sound weird, nasally, that's why.
Yeah, because you're under the weather. In fact,
it's been so cold here.
I know. It's irritating, isn't it?
It's like, seriously, I was driving my car, and not today, but the other day, and it said one. Like it was one degree.
That's wrong.
This is November.
Someone need a hug. That's...
yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, I have confession. We've got a number of elf audio clips that we wanted to spring on you this hour. Let's hear that one again, can we? Here it comes.
Does someone need a hug?
Do you, Greg?
Hey, that's one of my all-time very favorite movies. Because right now, because of how you're treating me, I feel like an angry elf.
But yeah. You're an angry elf.
Call me elf one more time.
Okay, so
see, this
back
is,
on
you guys
track.
Torment me. There's nothing ever off limits when I'm sick. So.
This is true. It's a great opportunity to get our little jabs in there, but no, we
Thank
do
you.
Love you.
It is nourishing me because my love language is banter.
Exactly.
And sarcasm.
Well, bless you, sir. So tell me this. Do you have a verse you want to share with us?
I love 1 John 3:18 in context of what we're talking about. It says, Let us not love with mere words or in tongue, which are important. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's something good that my family, my wife, my kids need to hear me tell them I love them. But it's saying, don't just do that. So don't love with just mere words or tongue, but with actions. And I can tell my wife that I love her all day long, but if I'm not backing that up with some sort of action, then it's going to be very confusing. And she's going to listen to my actions more than words anyway. And so that's why I like these two ideas. We talked about this last time, the idea of cherishing. Mm-hmm. Cherishing is a mindset. Cherishing means that when I see my wife, I value her. I see her in such an honoring way. I value her. I see her as the treasure that God created her to be. And remember, what's cool is the Greek word for cherish means to warm. So as I value her, as I really recognize her as a priceless treasure, she warms up to me.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like that flower that follows the sunlight all day long. That's a good thing. But that's a mindset. And now is an opportunity to, how do we put that mindset of she's valuable into treating her then in valuable ways? That's the idea of nourishing someone.
And don't you think that there's almost a law of diminishing returns, that if you say one thing and you do another thing, eventually one can resent the words because there's no actions. It's almost like, don't say anything if you're not going to do, if you're not going to back it up, right? I mean, isn't there sort of
absolutely.
I tend to see that, where it's just like, that means nothing after a while because you're just saying it and not doing
anything. Empty promises.
Yeah.
Definitely. And that's why we need to back up how we feel and what we say to our spouse, to our family. And to do that, that's the idea of nourishing comes in. I think it's, what's so cool is if you go to Ephesians 5, so we all know that is kind of the marriage chapter. So there's so many good things in Ephesians 5 about marriage. But multiple times, Paul is talking to husbands in particular, saying that you need to love your wife as you love your own body. And it's good, and that's a good reminder, but let's be real. What does that mean? I mean, I eat a lot of bad food, so that's probably not what he meant.
That's how you love yourself.
Little Debbie, come on.
And so to give her a little Debbie won't translate.
Although I have
the same.
Lost 20 pounds, I have
I know,
to say.
That's amazing.
So I'm doing this better. I'm
Way
nourishing my own body better. But the idea is that what does that actually mean to nourish in Ephesians 5:29, it says, so how do I love my wife as I love my own body? It says that I'm to cherish her and then nourish her. I think nourish simply means that I need to figure out, how do I actively love her according to how she likes to be loved? In there's a great quote that basically saying that love is a verb. So love is an action, you know, that I need to figure out how to put my feeling of love towards my wife into some sort of behavior. So if we think of it that way, that love is a verb, it's not a noun, it's active. Love is not just a feeling of passion and romance, it's a behavior. That becomes the key.
And it's got to be the right behavior. I know I've told you this before, bless my sweet husband's heart, but got pregnant on our honeymoon, right? And so I'm newly married and I'm pregnant. Exactly. And I grew deep and wide, you know. And so I was not feeling real pretty. So got married in March, end of March. And so my birthday's in December and I'm ready to give birth. And for my birthday, my first birthday as a wife and soon to be mom, Kev gives me a toolbox, a peach colored toolbox, because he's Tim the tool man. And so he's thinking, hey, I love tools. I just girl it up a little. And I cried. I'm like,
put the flowers on there.
And you're not going to believe my response. My response was, you think I'm fat? That's, I don't know how I got that out of that, but I was fat because I was pregnant. And I was like, the last thing I need is a peach toolbox. And it was not good. So he was trying.
It. Had it been a whole tool chest, yeah. Then maybe I could see the whole fat thing.
He's
but
not lived that
it's
down.
It's a little skinny, little cute toolbox.
It wasn't cute. I just like take
it
this thing.
It was adorable to a guy.
Okay, so I didn't.
Well, that's your point, though.
Yeah.
That usually how I end up loving my wife can be based on the things that I love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I invite her on a Saturday to sit down and watch a college football game, I mean, come on. How loving is that?
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, can you think of anything more loving than for her to sit with me and eat some popcorn and drink something and watch a football game together? That's the perfect day for me on a Saturday. Not so much for Aaron.
She
hates football. And, yeah, it's just, it's not at all. So, I mean, I know that that's intuitive. I think at some level we get that. But I tell you what, you'd be surprised at how many people just, we're going to gravitate towards what feels loving to us. And that can send mixed messages again to our spouse. I mean, I wish I could say to my wife, hey, get my heart. I mean, my heart was to love you. When I ask you to watch a football game, don't miss that. But a lot of times they do. They miss that. They're not getting the heart part of it. They're getting the, well, why would I even love that? So we don't gain anything by doing things that we like for
our
spouse.
So we should maybe make it a point to find out what kind of gifts, what kind of actions speak love when you're not in the moment at the 11th hour. Wait a minute, real quick. I need to get you a gift because tomorrow's Mother's Day. What should I do? That doesn't fly so well.
You just freaked me out, by the way. I had to think, what month is it? Yeah. It's not Mother's Day tomorrow. Yeah,
sorry about that.
I get your point.
You know what
I'm saying,
though? So talk about
that.
I threw
up in my mouth a little bit, but I missed that one.
Yeah.
I distracted myself. What did you just ask?
I'm saying that to make a point to know when it's not the 11th hour, because I mean, there's something about our gestures that have, at least for us as women, there's a lot of baggage that can go with them because we tend to carry a lot of baggage. I hate to admit that, but there's so many emotional connections.
I don't agree with that, Susie.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, okay, fine.
You know what I'm saying?
I do. I think that one of the best things that we can do is, we talk a lot about this, is stay current with our spouse. Each season, my wife changes. And what she needed, you know, from me in specific ways can so change so quickly that if I'm not really committed to actively seeking out, Aaron, what do I do that helps you to feel loved? If I do that regularly, then I'm able to stay current. I'm able to stay on top of what is that she really wants to feel love. And I tell you what, I know when we come back from the break, because I'm assuming that we're going to have to do that here in a second, I've got one of the greatest stories that ever happened to us that taught me how to actually figure out what Aaron really needs from me to feel loved.
Cannot wait to hear that story. Maybe you've got a story to tell us, too, about how you nourished your spouse, how you gave them a gift that meant the world to them. 'Tis the season, huh? I want to hear from you. 877-933-2484. I think we have some Greg books we can give you. I'm sure of it. 877-933-2484. Or email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Talking to my good friend, Dr. Greg Smalley, about really how to love in action, how to nourish your spouse and what that means. More with Greg in just a moment.
My husband and I realize that without Christ, we probably wouldn't be married. Without God's grace and God's help from, you know, when we're coming at each other, both trying to be the boss or both trying to be right, I think that keeps us going in our marriage. It's only Christ.
Good thing you can laugh, right? And if you're listening, I'm still laughing about the peach toolbox. It was really funny.
But at least you weren't laughing after talking about Jesus. So
exactly.
That lady's in trouble.
Thank you. Yeah.
With God.
I'll move right on, Greg. So the story. You're talking about the story? He's on meds, people. He's sick. Okay. What's your story? Tell me.
Well, all right. So Aaron and I were living in Missouri. And so we were going to be speaking at somewhere in near Nashville. And so I thought that it was virtually impossible to find a direct route from Missouri to Nashville. But I'm telling you, guys, you'd be so impressed. I figured out this great route. Even though Aaron was begging me to, like, consult with AAA. I mean, how emasculating is that? You know, I don't trust you. Call AAA to ask them if this is true. Well, I wouldn't. And I had this whole thing mapped out, but it's basically a straight line. So we're driving along, and we're a little behind schedule, so we really had to make good time to get to the place where we're going to speak on time. And so all of a sudden, the further we went, the less and less populated it got, to where it really we ended up like in just cornfields, and Aaron was going, now are you sure this is the right way? Yes. Because literally you could see it on the map, because we were nearing the Mississippi River. And so all of a sudden our road dead ends right at the Mississippi. Like, you can see the Mississippi and you can see the road across the Mississippi. There just wasn't a bridge.
Mm.
That would have been helpful to point that out on the map.
I bet AAA could have told you that.
They might have been able to, but the map was very misleading.
Okay.
So as you can imagine, I mean, we're in the middle of nowhere. We are at least 2 hours out of our way. And so the thing that I'll never forget about this, right? Now, Aaron could have mocked me. She could have been mad at me. She could have done a lot in frustration, because now we're going to be late. And although I'm the one usually in our marriage that hates being late, but this was embarrassing. I'll never forget what she did, though. So we started driving back, and I finally look at her. I'm like, go ahead, say it. You know, the old I told you so. And instead, she reached under her seat and took out, like, she had this little notepad. And she goes, hey, instead of talking about your driving, let's do this instead. And she said, I want you to answer the statement, I feel loved when you dot, dot, dot. In other words, what is it, Greg, that I do that helps you to feel loved?
Love it.
And we literally, Susie, we did that for the next 2 hours as we got back onto the actual highway that would take us eventually to Nashville. But it was one of the most powerful things that we ever did. And what I learned that day, that has now become the secret for Aaron and I staying current with one another in terms of what we need to feel loved. Hmm. It's such a simple little thing. As a matter of fact, if you want to rock your marriage tonight, go home and just have your spouse, have your kid, I mean, whoever, have them just answer that statement, I feel loved when you dot, dot, dot. And, you know, for me, you know, Aaron was asking me that. And one of the things I love when Aaron gets up early, she's not a morning person at all, but I love it when she wakes up early and cooks breakfast for me. My mom used to do that when I was growing up. And by the way, remember one time when we were first, we literally had been married like a week, and we were back from our honeymoon. And when Aaron wasn't getting up to cook me breakfast, because that's what my mom had done, I just assumed that's what a wife would do. I even asked her, I said, hey, are you mad at me? And she goes, no, why do you think that? I said, well, I've noticed that you sleep in and you don't cook breakfast. And she went, what are you talking about? And I made the mistake of going, well, my mom. And that was all that I was able to get out.
It went black after that.
Yeah. I don't remember much about that year, much less that.
Beef and cheese.
What was that one? Let's hear it again.
You smell like beef and cheese.
That's about what she made me feel like after that. The point is that after we had a good laugh about that, she even told me, she goes, hey, you want to hot breakfast in the morning, light your cornflakes on fire.
I love her.
Anyway, I'm perfectly capable now of cooking my breakfast. But that is one thing when she does that, because I know that she doesn't like to get up in the morning. She hates to eat breakfast. But when she does that, it does make me feel loved. I mean, she has to. It just means that's a way that I feel loved. I feel loved when she does sit down and watch a football game with me.
Well, if it's not her thing to get up and then she does get up and make breakfast, that's love in action, you know?
That's right.
And I think
that's
such a great example of when we really are focusing first on, which I love that we did last time, was cherishing. I don't think you can nourish until you get a mindset of cherish, right? Otherwise, it's, you know, I'm checking this list off. This is what people tell me to do. I'm trying in my marriage. But I think if it's not coming out of a heart of love, it's all it does, I think, is breed pride and even frustration if it's not returned, because you're still keeping an account. But if it's coming out of a heart that cherishes, and I know she cherishes you, but to do something that's so different than what you normally even would do, I think, you know, it heals something in you, blesses something in you, but it makes us more like Christ to be the one who's doing it, you know?
It really does. Cherishing, valuing them sets up then this idea of then now I need to treat you in valuable ways. And I think an important mindset, Susie, that you were talking about is I think you have to then have that servant's mindset. I mean, you know, I'm human. I'm selfish. You know, I'm stuck on what I want, those kinds of things. And so I think that if I'm really going to get good at nourishing my wife, loving her in ways that help her to feel loved, that it's going to start because not only do I value her, but I'm willing to be a servant. I love the origin of the word servant. Listen to this. This is really cool. The origin of the word servant is from the mid-14th century. And here's the meaning. It means professed lover. So a servant,
wow,
okay, is a professed lover, one devoted to the service of a lady. So in other words, we need this sort of you first attitude. How would I treat a lady and then really seek to put the needs of our spouse ahead of our own needs? Isn't that cool?
That's,
I mean,
beautiful.
That's professed lover, the one devoted to the service of a lady. So as a husband, that's perfect. I need to see my wife again as that lady, as that queen, value her, putting my needs before her. And that is the essence of humility.
So
go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was going to say, what do you say then to the person who's saying, tried that, done that, but they're maybe in a place of love keeps account, love keeps no account, but they're keeping an account. They're saying, I've tried that. I've taken 3 steps. I've taken 5 steps. He's taken no steps. I'm not taking any more steps. So they're really kind of stalled out. What do you say to them?
On one hand, I want to say it doesn't matter. You are called to love regardless of how you're being loved back. We are called to serve. We are called to model ourselves after Christ, to become Christ-like. Christ came, it says, not to be served, but to serve. I think of him washing the feet of the disciples. I mean, that's the epitome of a servant. He lowered himself down to what a servant would typically do. Remember, the disciples were horrified. You know, how can you do this? And you shouldn't be the one doing this. But what he was saying is that it doesn't matter what you're doing, that I want to serve you. I want to out-serve you. I think that was the message there. You are valuable enough that I'm going to out-serve you and humble myself enough to do that. And I think that truly a good marriage is a great marriage is made up of two servants who are simply trying to out-serve each other. Mm. I mean, imagine what that would be. Susie, we've talked a lot before that I think the wrong focus is on how do I have a great marriage. So if I'm watching what my wife is doing, if I'm keeping account of that, I'm keeping track, I'm keeping score and saying, look, I'm doing all these things, and what is she doing? What is he doing? They're doing nothing. I think that's the wrong focus. The right focus is what can I do to be a great spouse? And for me, how what do I need to be doing today to be a great husband, regardless of what my wife is choosing to do or not? Now, and I hear it all the time. I know that that's frustrating. I know it's disheartening when you feel like you're the only one putting forth effort, but you can't change them. So sometimes it's even just being willing to step back and say, God, what are you really calling me to do, and who are you wanting me to be? And I love Gary Thomas's Sacred Marriage, where it's not, marriage isn't about happiness. Marriage is about becoming more like Christ. Marriage is this beautiful thing filled with so many great things. But yet I say at the end of the day, it's still about becoming more like Christ. And so in those moments where I feel like I'm the only one, that's still when God, he's perfecting me. Like that gold.
Indeed.
And that's what's beautiful about that. And that service helps us to get there.
I think we have more to talk about that. And thinking as you're talking that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. And we love because he loved us first. And so to start there and then live in response to that love. More with Dr. Greg Smalley in a moment. Call in if you've got a question. 877-933-2484. We'll be right back.
The key, at least in my own mind, has been to know what a grace and undeserved kindness it is to have my wife, and to show her honor rather than, you know, just what my mood might happen to be at the moment.
I just like to smile. Smiling's my favorite.
Smiling's my favorite. Hey, Greg, the wheels are coming off today. We got Rap, we got Elf, and we got a listener who knows how to honor his wife. Glad you tuned in. Glad you're here with us, Greg.
I'm thrilled to be here. Of course, yeah. Now I need to go home and watch Elf tonight. So you have changed my life,
exactly.
Susie.
Well,
you've given me
my
a to-do list.
Yay. Well, we're talking today about nourishing our spouses. Last time you were on, we talked about cherishing and how you're saying nourishing is an action. So our producer, Matt, came up with his love as a verb. I think that was Audio Adrenaline or DC Talk, one of those guys. Yep, from the 80s or something like that. But love is a verb. And what I was thinking about before when you're talking about how if we focus on what our spouse is or isn't doing, we can kind of get locked up in our motives. And you and I were talking during the break that if we're Christians, we're Christ followers first and spouses second. And as you're talking, I'm thinking of two passages of Scripture. One is that we loved because he loved us first. You know, we loved because he first loved us. And while we were yet sinners, he died for us. So he went first on both of those accounts. And so that's really your message, isn't it? For the person who's got a spouse who's not receiving or reciprocating, we go first regardless because we follow Christ first and foremost.
What I love about what you're saying, I think it two of my most favorite words when it comes to marriage is one, serving. In other words, he went first, so he loved us.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the essence of being a servant, going first. But then you talked about him dying for us, and I think that's the essence of sacrificing. You know, when he talks to me as a husband, he's telling me to love my wife as he loved the church. He gave up his life for us. And that's another part I think that's necessary. If we're really gonna love well and as a verb in discovering our spouse's love language, discovering what they need to feel, what they need to feel loved, that sacrifice then comes, that to me, that's a little bit deeper. Serve means I'm looking and actively watching for what can I do for her. Sacrificing means that I do it at the most inconvenient of times.
Wow, that's good.
Because sometimes I get into this mindset of, okay, I'll serve, but sort of on my own time and when it's convenient, and I don't feel like it right now. But I think truly, if as a Christ follower, that especially at times when I'm tired or worn out or I'm wanting something, I'm needing, you know, to be recharged. And I realized this the other day. One of the things that I've done to really serve my wife, I asked her. I said, "What is one thing that you hate around our house, you hate doing? It just drives you crazy. You're going to do it because you're going to serve our family, but what is it?" And she said, "I hate managing the dishes, you know, getting them into the dishwasher and taking them out." I'm like, "I know, I totally hate that too." She's like, "But you never do that." "I know, because I hate it. But it has to get done." "I know, and thank you, you do it." "I know, that's my point." And so I said, "Honey, that's mine now. Mm. I own it." And what was funny is I said, "So you can't tell me when to do it or how to do it. I'm doing it, but let me figure this out." And so I'd have everybody stack all the dishes up, and at night before I go to bed, I put them all in the dishwasher. And then when I wake up in the morning, I unload it. And I hate doing that, by the way.
Mm.
But what I realized though, that it was again, all on my own time. In one of the things that she said is, she goes, "You know, I love that you're doing this, and I'll let you do it however you want. Just hear me. I hate going to bed with those dishes in the sink." Because how I was first doing it was that I just would leave everything, because I always get up earlier than her, and so I knew that I could do it early in the morning. And that was, I still was serving her. But on my own time. And so even though she would have been fine with that, I realized that, you know what, I need to do that before I go to bed as a way to really just sacrifice for her. Because usually, you know, at 9:30, I'm exhausted. I'm ready to go to bed. And I don't want to, I hate doing, you know, cleaning right before I go to bed. But that was one thing that I realized that I could do to really sacrifice for her.
Wow.
So I think if we're trying to outserve our spouse, if we're willing to do that at the most inconvenient of times, which is, I think, the essence of sacrificing, then I think that the final piece of this then is really becoming a great student of your spouse. You've got to become aware of what they really like and what speaks love to them. And that's why I think that statement, you know, have them answer that. I feel love when you ... And you know, read a book, you know, take Gary Chapman's, you know, The Five Love Languages. I mean, that's a fantastic book that identifies some key ways that people need to, you know, that want to feel loved, whether it's acts of service or time or words of affirmation, whatever. I think we have to really begin to study. Our goal needs to be, I want to earn a PhD in my wife. I have a doctorate. I spent many years getting that. Do I approach my wife, my marriage, with the same veracity, the same commitment to studying, to keeping current, you know, to keep a license up? I've got to get so many, continuing education credits. That's what we should be doing within our marriage.
You know, I think that five love language message, of course, it's a multi-million bestseller.
I wish I would have thought of that.
I'm telling you.
Dadgummit.
You actually signed some books for Gary.
How do you remember these things?
In China or Japan or somewhere.
This huge line of people waiting. I'm thinking, I'm a big deal in China. And they all started handing me five love languages to sign.
And what did you do?
I could, how do you explain in Mandarin, which I don't speak, that I'm not Gary Chapman, but I just signed away.
Okay.
So there's a whole bunch
of
copies of
smiling people
his
going,
book with
he's
my
younger.
Autograph.
He's younger than I thought.
Hey, in 100 years, those with my signature will be the ones that will be worth a lot of money because it's so odd.
That's true. Anyway, what I was going to say, though.
That
you
didn't
know,
seem sincere, by the way.
I'm so sorry. Okay. It's really
you
good.
You smell
that
like
you...
beef and cheese right now, Susie.
All right. Anyway, back to his five love languages. I want to tell you that was like a light bulb moment for us because it's, you know, I remember reading about that where he had people come into his office on the verge of divorce and the spouse is saying, what? I do this, I do this, I do this. And he'd say, okay, what are your love languages? And he explained it to the other spouse and they'd be totally opposite. And really at the lowest point of our marriage, Greg, that was the case. So my love languages are quality time and acts of service. So in the place of our marriage when Kev was being the workaholic and just gone constantly, he was still kind. He'd still occasionally bring a gift home or something. But my love bank was empty because there was no quality time and no acts of service. Things around the house were just falling by the wayside. And so I couldn't really, I didn't know the five love languages at that time because it was so long ago, and neither did he. But once I got a hold of those, it helped validate going, this is how I feel loved. And so I think that's so key because a person can lose heart if they feel like I'm doing this, I'm doing this, I'm doing this. So the idea of I feel loved when, I think you can even identify what your love language is by the things that are on that list, wouldn't you?
You absolutely can. I mean, it's the same thing. So either look at Gary Chapman's, you know, the way that he's organized those five. For me, sometimes it's if Aaron asks me, what do you need to feel loved? What's your love language? Sometimes it takes me a little while to actually think that through. But when she says, hey, what do I do that helps you to feel loved or valued? It's a very easy thing for me to think about because I start thinking, yeah, she does things all the time. Yeah. Yeah. When she, you know, picks up dry cleaning or something for me, when she, you know, as I said earlier, cooks breakfast in the morning. I tell you, for me, the biggest one for me is when my wife is being playful. There's something about when she's laughing and just having fun. My wife's an amazing person, very outgoing, but that she has a certain intensity about her because she can get so much done. And yet when she's really kind of slows down and is just cracking some jokes or being funny or being playful, there's something about that. Remember we talked about that idea of of cherishing means to warm, and when we feel warm, we're gonna turn towards that. Well, the idea of nourishing means to grow. That's what that Hebrew word for nourish means, to grow. And so the more that my wife does these things that help me to feel loved, the more I'm growing in my love, the more I'm growing as a person. Actually, what's interesting is the second there's the Hebrew word for nourish means to grow, but it also means to mature. And there's also a really cool part of as we nourish, it does help, I think, our spouse become more like Christ. Although that's not my goal, is to try to, help perfect my wife. I'm going to purify her, make her more like
Christ. Yeah, let
like
me know
Christ.
How that goes.
Yeah, seriously. Mm-hmm. And but yet that's a part of that word nourishing is to mature. And so I think when we're meeting the love needs of our spouse, I mean, God certainly is the person that ultimately fills us up, but He's going to use us as a way to help our spouse grow. And I think that when we're meeting those needs, what it's doing is it's keeping their heart open.
Yeah.
You talk to a spouse who feels neglected. Like, remember your scenario. It one of the segments was, well, my spouse isn't doing anything. Why do I have to be the one always doing things? I tell you, when we stop meeting our spouse's love language, their love needs, when we neglect them, what does it do to them? I tell you what it does. It shuts them down.
Yeah.
Their heart closes, and over time, that heart is going to harden. There is no way that you can grow in your relationship with Christ when you have a hardened heart.
You know, it makes me think of the Velveteen Rabbit, the whole theme in that little children's story is love makes you real. And that is just true. Yeah. When love is a safe place, you become your best self. And if marriage ultimately, I just believe that's one of God's best purposes, is that we grow together in Christ, but there's a personal emotional safety in the context of marriage so that I can become the best me God intended me to be. And I just noticed, just because Kev is such a steady, stable, patient guy, that he just stayed so steady through so many of our hard times. Some of my fears dissipated, my insecurities waned.
Right.
I just can't even explain just the presence of consistent love, what it did. Like you said, it gave me room to respond to God and be everything He intended me to be. And I'm thinking, Greg, of that person, of that husband listening whose wife maybe is not responding to him, because oftentimes we'll gear this towards the wife, but this happens for husbands too, where wives are maybe more involved in their girlfriends than they are just pursuing the husband and saying, what makes your heart beat? What advice could you give to this husband who's feeling like, I'm trying to connect, she's just really wrapped up in her social scene?
For a husband, I think one of the greatest things that we can do is to pursue our spouse, to pursue our wife. And I get so caught up in work and just being tired or going with the kids or just being busy or whatever it is. And I think especially for a husband, it speaks such value when we actively pursue our wife, when they feel us turning towards them and focusing on them. In Hosea, I would tell any husband who says, my marriage isn't exactly where I want it to be, you read Hosea chapter 2, starting at verse 14 all the way to chapter 3, because what you find is that you find God winning back his wife, the children of Israel, but he's laying out a formula. And the very first thing that he says that he's going to do is he says that I am going to allure my wife. I am going to lead her into the desert and speak tenderly to her. The idea of allure means that when I'm alluring my wife, what I'm doing is I'm doing something to get her to turn towards me. If you have a wife who's ignoring you, who's not paying attention to you, start alluring her. Find out what would allure you. You throw a fishing lure towards a fish to what? You're getting that fish's attention to strike out. Well, I don't want my wife to strike out at me, but I definitely want to do something to catch her attention,
to captivate her,
to have her turn towards me. And Susie, I literally have asked my wife that very question. So open up that section, Hosea 2, verse 14, and say, look, God is doing something. He's speaking tenderly to his wife, and that's getting her attention. So if you can't even figure this out, start with what he does. And speak tenderly to her. But I tell you, there's some really cool things that we can do to allure our spouse. And I'd love to talk about that.
Let's definitely talk about that. We just need to take a quick short break. When we come back, Greg will give some advice to the husband listening today who wants to allure his wife back. It is possible. Don't give up. Maybe you've got a question. This is the last segment where you can give a call. 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. Or email me, Susie at myfaithradio.com. More with Doc Smalley in just a minute.
Singing in the North Pole.
Yes, there is.
No, it's not.
We sing all the time.
No, it's not.
Especially when we make toys.
I'm sorry. It's Elf Quote Day. Live
the promise.
It
doesn't get better than this.
No kidding, man. You have Dr. Greg Smalley on, and you were saying before the break, Greg, that I just asked you to speak to that husband who feels like his wife is not turned towards him. Maybe she's turned towards her duties as a mom, her girlfriends, her social activities, and the first thing you said is found in Hosea. To allure her. And so give some advice on how a guy does that.
Yeah, get her attention. So it's possible you're doing everything right and she's got something going on. Maybe her heart is hardened. I mean, I don't know. But because you can't control her, the only thing you can do is control you. Just think, okay, maybe I am trying to allure her with things that actually would never speak love to her. So like asking my wife to sit down and watch a football game would not cause her to be allured to me. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm going to then allure my wife, I need to find out exactly what can I be doing and ask that when what is it that I do that catches your attention that causes you to turn towards me? And better yet, even when I do, it helps you to feel loved. And just that's the right question to really go after. I've asked Erin that, and you know, one of the things that she tells me, she says, when you spend time with me every day, alone, so maybe after the kids are down, you know, our youngest is 7, so when Annie's down, she goes, when you ask me questions, that she goes, something about you being curious enough to ask me questions speaks love to me. It shows me that you value me enough to pursue me. You're interested. I'm fascinated by you and what's going on in your life. So there's something powerful for my wife when I ask her questions. And I heard that when, okay, got it. Wait, what do I ask you? I mean, I didn't know. I'm a guy. Just what? Tell me. And I asked her. I said, give me some questions. If I asked you on a regular basis, would actually speak value to you. Would speak love to you. And she said, if you ask me how I'm feeling, so ask me how I'm doing emotionally, ask me how things are going between me and the kids, ask me how things are going between me and my girlfriends, and then ask me one thing that God's been teaching me as of late. And I'm telling you, Susie, I wrote those things down, and as you can see, I have memorized them. It's not complicated. I have 4. I have learned that I have to switch up the questions, because if I always start with, how are you doing emotionally, you know, 2 hours later, we're still talking about what's going on emotionally, and that's a good thing. And I don't mean that in a sarcastic way. That's her love language. My wife feels it's such a deep level, and I love that. It's different than me. You know, I have feelings, of course, but she's just, that's so different for her. And so when I ask her, hey, tell me, how what's going on for you emotionally? What? Oh, she just leans in. And we can have this great conversation. That can be a 5-minute conversation. So the idea, allure your wife, your spouse in ways that are meaningful. And like I said before, when Erin asked me the same thing, and I said, when you're being playful, when you're having fun, when you're laughing, actually, I love it when my wife plays jokes on me. And,
that's
and
your
she's
family, all right.
she's done that plenty. I mean, I'm sure I've told the story many times, but there was a time she woke up in the middle of the night, thought she heard a noise. So I went to go check. Well, it is middle of the night. So as I'm gone, because, you know, checking the house, she puts pillows on her side and then and lays next to my side of the bed. So I finished, popped the hall light on, look, and I think I see her in bed. So I'm just now, you know, shuffling back, dead tired to get back on my side of the bed. And when I reach my side where she's laying down on the ground, she screams as loud as she can and grabs me. Well, I'm thinking it's the intruder. You know, I didn't think to jack under my own bed. And I told her, I said, honey, I'm older now, obviously, and my heart is weaker. You got to be careful. You know, this would be a hard one to explain to the kids. Dad's gone because I scared him to death, you know. But I'm telling you, this is honest truth. After I went and changed my shorts and came back to bed, I have never felt more loved in all my life.
Mm.
Just because that something when she's being playful like that, it speaks love to me.
You know, Greg.
That would not speak love to her, by the way.
Yeah.
I would probably get shot,
yeah,
for one
I'd
thing, if
you.
I did that to her.
Yeah, I'm
yes,
telling you.
You would beat me.
I would beat you, but that runs in the family. I remember one time when I was out at Focus and I was coming in your back door to your from your garage to your like back hallway there. Do you know three smallies jumped out and scared me? Aaron, Annie, and Garrison. I mean, to tell, I'm like, bah! I'm like, I should have known, but they came out of nowhere, bah! You know, and I'm like, of course, this is the house of practical jokes.
We're just trying to love on you.
You did.
Susie.
That's great.
See that? So that's what does it for me.
Hmm.
And you have to decide what is it that speaks love to you. But if we're not taking time though to study our spouse and then to ask, so that we keep current and updated, because that's the other part of this. If I feel like, hey, I asked you when we got married what you need to feel loved, and if I keep that attitude that I'm just going to keep doing those things, you're going to miss it because we change. We go through different seasons. And, you know, when now that we've got a child out of our home or when Aaron's mom died, I mean, you know, just we change and we need something different. And I want to keep pursuing my wife to really to figure out what she needs. You know, Susie, there's also, I think another way that we can approach this in terms of nourishing is also then sort of this idea of little daily acts of random kindness. In it's one thing to study your spouse and to be real clear on what they need to feel loved, you know, and that's going to get us a whole long ways, but it's also another just to be actively looking for ways to serve and to be kind every day. Rather, that's, you know, I don't know if my wife's ever said, you know, my love language is when you offer to pick the kids up from school. But it could be that I'm noticing by what she's saying that she's got something going on and I can volunteer, hey, why don't you let me pick the kids up today? Or noticing when something's, you know, out of place or messy, you know, cleaning that up. So I think it's also a part of just keeping our eyes open and looking around at what's happening that I could do under that guise of that random act of kindness. We do that for others.
Exactly. Exactly.
Man, then we have days where we're paying for people's coffee behind us. And and yet, do we think that way, or are we doing that for our spouse? I mean,
you
it's
know,
easy to kind of get in the rut of not doing that.
I think sometimes gravity takes over our perspective. We so quickly default
to
what's
taking a hold of my body. That's for sure.
Well, we default to what's not happening, and we start to get so critical of each other. There was a gal I interviewed twice now. Her name's Tricia Lott Williford, and she realized she'd gotten into that mode. And so she started a journal and just started to list every single day something that she was thankful for that her husband did. So, and she just said it changed her perspective completely, that she was married to a good guy. I mean, you can build a case against anybody. You can fault anybody if you focus long enough. Do you know, Greg, she spent 2 years writing something every day. And on their anniversary trip, she gave it to him. He read it cover to cover. 6 months later, he got a weird flu bug and died.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. And she said, what if I wouldn't have done that? But she said, my whole attitude and perspective changed. And I just feel like that is
what
even
a gift.
It is. And it's a really wake up call for all of us. We can sometimes default to that critique and forget that we're not nourishing this person God's entrusted to us. And we don't know how long we're going to have them. So how about we enter into this holiday season with the heart of gratitude and look for ways to nourish each other? I love the topic, Greg. And as we get ready to wrap up, would you just pray for that couple listening that is sort of flatlined and needs maybe a fresh infusion of love and patience and kindness.
Absolutely. John Ortberg said, when Jesus came as a servant, he was not disguising who God is. He was revealing who God is. So we need to show people who God really is.
Love
and that's
that.
A true sacrificing servant. God, just help us to have that attitude, Lord, that I have been put on this earth to love, and that men will know you're my best disciples by the way I love one another. So God, help us to love well by serving and being and doing that sacrificially. Mm-hmm. And so Lord, let us not have the attitude as what needs to happen so my marriage is better. Lord, help us to understand how I can be a better husband, be a better wife today. Give us the courage, the wisdom to see those things and the courage to do them, God. And thank you for the promises that as we do these things, as you said in John 13:17, that you will bless us when we do them. So God, just thank you for your promises, and we love you and ask these things in your precious name. Amen.
Amen. Feel better, my friend, and happy Thanksgiving to the Smalley clan.
To you too.
Appreciate you so much. Well, thanks for tuning in. You've been listening to Live the Promise. You can find a podcast of today's program on our website, myfaithradio.com. Remember to sign up for the great giveaway. All we need from you now is a count me in. You'll find it on the website, and hope you'll tune in again tomorrow. God bless you. Have a blessed night.